everyone, and welcome to episode number 144. Today we are going to be discussing Geek Actually. My name is Karen. I'm joined by my usual co-host, Brittany. Hey, Brittany.
Hey.
And today we're actually joined by two of the authors of Geek Actually, Kathy Yardley and Cecilia Tan. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
So excited to have you guys here and to talk about this and some really cool nerdy things that are related to this book you guys wrote.
Yeah.
We're in the right place for this. As usual, yeah. If you guys would like to find us on Twitter, that's @BookHype. And you can also visit us at facebook.com/hypeablebooks, where we post all of our book content from hypeable.com. And you can also follow us on Goodreads @hypeablebooks. And as usual, we're going to kick this off with what we've been reading. And I'm actually going to pass this over to Kathy first. I've chosen you at random. You were the first name I wrote down. What kind of books have you been reading lately?
Well, let's see. I just read Three Little Words by Melissa Blue, who's one of our co-authors. She has this other series called Dirty Sexy Geeks, and her writing is just hilarious and smoking hot. So I read that, and I read a really geeky gay romance called Looking for Group, which is about like a couple, two guys that meet on a MMO, like in a gaming group. And it's, if you know gaming, it's hilarious. It's just fantastic.
That sounds cool. I honestly thought you were going to say Looking for Gru, because Brittany and I just did a podcast this morning about Angel and like the character Gru on Angel. And I was like, oh, this sounds relevant, but no, we didn't go quite there.
Gru.
Yeah. What about you, Cecilia? What have you been reading?
Well, the absolute best thing that I've read in the last whole year wasn't a book. I just read the two monstrous graphic novels by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda, and it just won the Hugo Award yesterday. So I'm not in Helsinki for the Hugo Awards this year. So I was like watching on a live stream, and so I'm so excited. It's just amazing. And if you're not into comics, this is not like a quote unquote comic. It's the art is this gorgeous, painted, beautiful. I mean, I can't even describe it. And then the story is, it's kind of a mix between kind of steampunk and Dune and Star Wars and, you know, all of these things, but you almost don't even realize it until you are almost all the way through the whole first graphic novel that all the characters are female except for one or two. And, you know, it's like, you know, our main character is a girl trying to figure out her heritage and whatnot. And her mother was very controlling and, you know, this and that. And it has so many elements kind of that I love in science fiction and romance and fantasy and comic books kind of mixed together into this melange. And it's just fabulous. I can't even really describe it. I have to tell people, you just have to read it. And as soon as you grasp it, you'll be like, oh my God, this is great. So, you know, yeah. There's magic and there's, you know, it's great. And it just won the Hugo Award. So now hopefully some of the people will be going out and buying it and loving it as much as I do. And I want to see I want the novelizations. I want the movies. I want to do everything with it.
You know? So, that would be so cool.
Yeah. That was fantastic. And then the last like genuine romance I read was I read for the Rita Awards, because, you know, when you enter a book in the Rita Awards, they always send you a pile of books to read. And then I always try to go and read some of the things that were nominated and whatnot. And I read Tara Sumi's The Master. You know, if you like BDSM romance but are tired of the kind of 50 Shades of Grey knockoff books, this one is a really great book. Just a really sensitive portrayal, great, you know, cold at first but dreamy hero. You know, he's got hidden wounds, she's got hidden wounds, and it's of course them getting together, which heals them both. And it's just it's a lean, mean fighting machine of a of a BDSM romance novel. I was just like, oh, this is how it should be done. So yeah, Tara Sumi. I haven't read all of her books, but I probably will eventually.
Awesome.
So those are my two most recent things.
Comic books and graphic novels definitely count on this podcast. We've definitely talked about them before. I love Monstress so much. I got a chance to interview Marjorie Liu one time, and I totally flipped out about it because I think she's so cool. And Monstress is totally got into it from the first page. It was really amazing. I need to catch up on it, but I'm so happy to hear that she won. That is really cool.
Yeah, so fabulous. So fabulous. And then, you know, of course, the Hugo Awards slate is basically like my reading list for the next, you know, couple of months, and the, you know, as well as some of the reader winners I need to go and catch up on. And it's just, you know, never time wasted when you're looking at the best of the best. So, you know, I've got some N.K. Jemisin sitting on my TBR right now. I mean, the To Be Read pile is actually a To Be Read shelf. It's an entire shelf in my office. and that's not counting all the books that are like downloaded, you know, so that's just the physical books. So I've got a lot to catch up on. I need a vacation, you guys. That's what I need.
Yeah, you and me both.
I need a bookcation where it will just be like sit around and read. That would be my idea of heaven. And has it happened? No.
Yeah, that would be amazing. As my friends know, I have four bookshelves that are my physical copies of To Be Read books, not to mention all the stuff that's downloaded on my Kindle. So, it's a problem. But books, they're so great. I can't stop buying them.
No.
I do want to get into some stuff about you guys specifically. And Kathy, I'll kick it off with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And not only that, I know, like, you know, having to brag about yourself, not super fun, but and kind of awkward sometimes. But, you know, what is sort of your specialty too, what you bring to the table for Geek Actually, and kind of just give us an overview of what you've done and what led you here? Because this is a pretty cool project that you guys are working on.
I was approached by Serial Box, who's our publisher, who wants to be sort of the HBO of serialized fiction. Mm-hmm. And they said that they had this idea that they wanted it to kind of be like Sex and the City, but they wanted it with sort of geeky, contemporary, diverse, inclusive, intersectional feminist characters. And I was like, I am so on board with this. And they found me because I had started self-publishing a series of romantic comedies that were, it's my Fandom Heart series. And they are diverse. I guess they're feminist. I consider myself a feminist and I like to deal with those kind of topics. So the stories will reflect that. So when they said, you know, we want to try this project, I was like, okay. They said they'd like me to be a showrunner. The other thing I do in my nonfiction because life, I'm an editor and a writer's coach, specializing in sort of plot development. Like I can get anybody to plot points in an hour, which is apparently a weird talent. So with that background of story consult and the ability to kind of work with other writers, I figured that I'd be a good match for what we were trying to accomplish.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. What about you, Cecilia?
I'm a longtime, you know, fiction writer. I wrote science fiction, fantasy, erotica, romance, you know, a lot of different genres. I'm probably extremely nerdy. I've been going to science fiction conventions since I was my first one in the 80s. Oh my God. It was 1989. That was the very end of the 1980s. So, you know, I kind of think how they found me originally. I guess I'm very vocal on Twitter about inclusion and feminism and the importance of sexuality and, you know, fully realized female characters and I don't know, things like that. And and I had written some serial fiction myself in the past. Unlike Kathy, though, plotting is not my strong point. In fact, when they were getting all the writers together, you know, in they always talk about there are plotters and there are pantsers, and the plotters, you know, you write outlines and synopses and whatever, and the pantsers kind of fly by the seat of our pants. And when they were like, okay, which one of you are pantsers? We're all pantsers except for Kathy. So I said, her title has to be Cat Herder, because the other three of us are like, and what about this? And we could do this, and this character could that, and that and the other thing. It's like, okay, let's stay focused on, you know, we only have 13 chapters here, you know, we have, the book can only be this long, so it has to, you know, this, these things have to tie up, and so it was like, you know, okay, oh, all right, you know, whatever. She's like, you know, keep those ideas, though, because, you know, if we work on a sequel, we'll be, you know, needing those. So yeah, she was the one who kept us in line, yeah, for the most part.
Hey, you need a little bit of a mix of both, you know. Sometimes I have grand ideas and Brittany's around to be like, hey, maybe we should be a little more realistic about this.
And then sometimes Karen gives me ideas, and then I end up writing 500 to 600 words about mirrors. So yeah, give and take.
But it's good. Goodness. It's good to have that mix of both. So for anyone who isn't familiar with it, how would you describe Peak Actually? What's your sort of elevator pitch for this?
It's basically the geeky friends, like women friends that you want to hang out with. That is what I keep hearing from readers, especially if you are already that kind of person, these are people you'll recognize. If you have online friends, these are people you'll know or want to know.
Yeah, I mean, even just from reading the first episode, you can tell that these are women that you could really see yourselves in, and even if not everything about them is something that you can relate to, there is an aspect of every single character that you're like, well, I've done that before, or I've been here, or like, this has happened to me, or I'm super into this or not into that. And it's really cool, because obviously, like, Brittany and I, as podcasters and journalists and writing for Hypeable, we are surrounded by everything that you guys talk about in Geek Actually. And like, I've been going to San Diego for years for Comic-Con, and we've done weird geeky things together. And every character is just like unapologetically proud of exactly who they are. And I think that is really fun to see on the page. So I guess, you know, what inspired this? Was it that need and that drive to find, to kind of put these types of women onto the page? Or did you guys also have something else in mind that you really wanted to accomplish with this? Like, you know, kind of what's your mission with Geek Actually?
My mission was definitely that we wanted, you know, there's a lot of science fiction and fantasy and nerdy literature that has female characters in it, but it's not about female nerds. So it's like, there's a way in which this is sort of metafiction for some of us, where, you know, like, instead of going out and writing an adventure novel, or, you know, five female hackers, you know, fighting the government or something like that, we were like, let's write some women who are actually like ourselves, and who we don't get, yeah, we really don't get to see most of the time. And it's a, you know, a participation kind of thing, where we were like, we wanted readers to be able to see themselves and think of themselves, whether they're, you know, women gamers, women, you know, science fiction people, women in the, you know, different industries related. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. We wanted to do that, and no one was really doing it as far as we could see, other than, you know, one-off characters here and there in romances or, you know, whatever. Because like, there are things like, I don't know, you could go all the way back to Revenge of the Nerds, and then there's Big Bang Theory, and, you know, so forth. It's like, it's always male characters, mm-hmm. you know, it's always, that's the stereotype, right? And then, of course, I mean, we've been fighting a culture war where then there are people who are like, well, girls can't be nerds, only guys can be nerds. And it's like, you know, okay, where the heck does that come from? You know, that's, it goes right up there with girls can't be physicists or astronauts or, you know, whatever. And I think I thought we got past that.
Yeah. So just hearing that line, like, offhand makes my blood boil.
It's just like, you know, yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. And I've always been involved in sort of breaking those stereotypes. I mean, I was a female tuba player. I was a female baseball player. I was, you know, whatever. It's like, I'm always finding myself in these milieu where people are like, oh, girls can do that. And I'm like, oh, come on, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. The way that we've kind of come to Hypable and everything, like, luckily Hypable is actually very female driven. Most of our staff members are female. And to have that presence on the internet, even to have a podcast, like, you know, Book Hype isn't our only podcast on the site. We have a lot of other ones, and most of them, all of them are pretty much female led. And we only have a couple of guys who podcast with us. And on the internet, that's not normal. Like, even podcasting is very male dominated, so being able to kind of put your thumbprint there is really exciting.
We definitely wanted to, or at least when I got involved, I know that I wanted to show situations that the other time when you see people, like when you see women characters that are nerdy or geeky, a lot of times they gloss over some of the unpleasant realities that we deal with, not just being geeky, but just being women in the world, especially women of color. And every now and then you'd see, like, you know, the Black woman who has apparently strangely never experienced racism in her life, or, you know, the woman, you know, programmer who, you know, everyone loves her work and she never sees any kind of blowback on that. We didn't want to create those kind of fantasies. It wasn't that kind of a story.
Right, exactly.
There are romantic elements, there are fun elements. It's not like, you know, this total, you know, dark, dreary, you know, baton death march of social justice.
Right, exactly.
It does deal with what we deal with, you know, I think in an unflinching way, and in a way that contributes to the story arc for each of our characters.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely merit in having characters who don't necessarily, who are just who they are, and they don't necessarily have to be like a PSA for issues. I mean, we talk about this a lot, you know, between Glee and Teen Wolf. In Glee, there was always this PSA for gay characters, which obviously nothing wrong with that. That is a reality of life. And that was the kind of show that was. In Teen Wolf, like, homophobia just doesn't exist. And it's kind of this perfect world, but it's also a statement as well. And I think both have merits. But when you're dealing with the story that you're dealing with and these characters, it's very obvious that these issues are going to come up. And I really like the confronting way that you tackle them, because it's very true to life. I mean, we've all experienced those kind of issues, and to be able to see these strong female characters take it on and also just be regular people too with regular issues, it's nice to kind of see that reality on the page. The last thing I wanted to talk about before we actually got into the specifics of Geek Actually was the structure and cereal box, because I find this so interesting that it kind of comes out in seasons and episodes, and the serialized fiction is definitely something I'm becoming more aware of lately. And I just kind of wanted to know what you guys really think about that and kind of what some of the challenges are, but also some of the things that make this a little bit easier to write a story like you're writing.
Kathy, you want to try that one first? or I can start.
I had not worked with serialized fiction like this before, so it was definitely a different approach for me. And one of the women on our team, Rachel, is a TV writer. So I learned a lot from her about thinking in terms of that kind of structure. That said, even among cereal boxes offerings, our work definitely has the overall series arc. So you really need to kind of follow along so that, you know, each episode builds on the previous one. It's not action adventure where each episode is kind of episodic and stands alone. They aren't vignettes. Everything does build up to a head. And it, I think it worked out really well. We had to work very closely together to make each episode and each character's, you know, development follow. So
right.
That was tricky. But it worked,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, the thing that made it different from just for writing in a team was really different for most of us. And the trying to then track characters across from one episode to the next to make sure that they're, it's all about emotion and their emotional arcs. And it's like, okay, how angry is she now when this thing happens? And so, and when is the payoff going to be? Is it coming that episode, or is it coming the next episode? Or is she still going to be scheming about it? Is it a slow burn that's going to go over several different chapters? Basically, each episode is a chapter. But what I liked about it is that it captures that same sort of excitement that that a lot of people experience now, like reading works in progress in fanfic, where, you know, the author writes the chapter and then posts it, and then writes another chapter and posts it, and you sort of wait, you're sort of anticipating between, you know, installments, like, okay, and what's going to happen next, and, you know, whatnot like that, except because this is a group of, you know, four professional authors, you know, it's going to be a certain length, when it's going to post, who's going to, you know, that sort of a thing. And that's what I've tried to do with some of my serial fiction. I write a piece called Darren's Guitar Chronicles, which is actually, it has actually surpassed the length of Harry Potter now. I've been posting it since 2009, two chapters
wow.
a week. And yeah, and people are just like, it's like a soap opera. People keep turning in, like, okay, and what's going to happen to Darren now? And oh my gosh, he's on tour in Colombia, and you know, and what's happening with so and so, you know, and why did they bring that guy with him as a roadie when they knew that he, you know, whatever. So, you know, people are just, you know, and if I mess up posting, like I forget what day it is, or I load the post for the wrong day or something, I get people pinging me on Twitter and texting me and whatever, being like, what happened to today's chapter? Where is it? You know, it's like, okay, all right. I see you guys are really anxious for it. It's okay. You know, so that kind of excitement is great. And
yeah.
Writers didn't have that kind of excitement in the past. You know, it's like it would take you 2 years to write a book, and then 2 years for your publisher to put it out, and then maybe a year after that you'd get some fan mail, you know, 5 years after you wrote it. And it's like, this is kind of a little more immediate. We see the, between social media, you know, whatever, it's like we see people's reactions right away, and seeing it chapter by chapter, it's like I'm seeing people's Goodreads reviews, you know, and they're like, oh my God, what's going to happen with this? And I can't wait to see what happens with that. And this had better happen, you know, and whatever. And it's just like, you know, people get very invested, and that's awesome. So,
yeah.
Addicted is what we really want them to be, addicted, but invested is a better word for it.
That is true. That is true. And I think, you know, going back to Geek Actually specifically, is that, like I was saying, these characters are so relatable, and I can see myself in more than one of them. And I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. And one of the awesome aspects of it is that not all of them live in the same place. They live all across North America instead of the same city. And like Brittany and I, you know, we've known each other for quite a few years now. She's on the East Coast. I used to live on the East Coast, but now I'm in Ohio. And all of our friends, I mean, we were talking before we started the podcast. Earlier today, we were podcasting with somebody from Denver and somebody from Australia. So it's, you know, all of our friends kind of live all over the place. And I don't know about you, Brittany, but I think that's like so cool, because you get to experience so many different cultures and types of people.
And not even that, like I see our friends from Australia more than I see like my best friend from high school who lives a half hour away.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. You know, there are people who I've been friends with for almost like going on 4 or 5 years now who I've never met, but still they're like the first person I need to tell something to. Like, mm-hmm. You know, it's just because of this online culture that we have. They're like, some of my best friends are people that I met online and haven't actually met in person. And they're still willing to be like, oh, if you ever come here, just sleep on my couch. And I'm like, okay, absolutely.
Right. I have so many couches across the world that I could sleep on. Like, I just need to take a year off and just travel. I think that would be so cool. Uh-huh. But I wanted to ask, have you guys had any long distance friendships that kind of inspired you to show these types of relationships in the book?
Oh gosh, yes.
Absolutely.
I'm still in closer touch with people I used to role play with online, even though we're not in the game currently, than I am with people in my own neighborhood, my own family, you know, that kind of a thing. It's like, you know, now we see each other on Facebook all the time and whatever. And then it's like, and we still go to some conventions where then I get to see them. We have like our little reunion of our gaming group, you know, and whatnot. But back in the day when we were still playing, at one point I was just like, you guys all just need to come to my house, you know. And like, I'm like, I live in a big house in outside of Boston. We're all, you know, just you, I'm the most central. Like, so one came from Canada, one came from Florida, you know. I mean, it was like one came from the West Coast, and it was like, I'm like, I've got extra, as long as you're not allergic to cats, my house is great. I've got extra bedrooms. Everybody has come for the weekend, and we all came, and you know, we went out to see Blue Man Group together, and went out to dinner, and you know, got silly and had cocktails, and basically had, you know, pajama party weekend. You know, it was great. It was super great, and you know, and none of us had ever met each other before, other than like the couple of people who are my friends in the game, who are real life friends, who mm-hmm. I dragged into the game. But it's like all the rest of us had not met. And it was magical, you know, and it was just like, all right, you know, and, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, they're still some of my best friends.
I've gotten to know so many writers through social media. Yeah. And it's that way exactly, where it's just, you feel like you've known them forever, even if you've never physically met them. And then when you have a writing conference, it's like, holy crap, you know, like,
right.
It's like your best friends from the jump, because all of the small talk and all the getting to know each other stuff is out of the way. You know, mm-hmm. this person, you just haven't, you know, physically been in face to face with them. And yep. I live outside Seattle. Before that, I lived in Northern California, and then Southern California, and then Northern California again, and Southern California. So I have made all these really good writing friends from different groups. And then we just keep in touch no matter where I live. So
right.
you just, mm-hmm. it's so much easier to just keep in touch with people you genuinely like, rather than just like,
yep. mm-hmm.
I'm just going to hang out with you because you're here. It's like,
right. yeah.
here is one Slack channel away.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right,
I got
exactly.
to know everybody. I mean, I'm still tight with everybody on the team. So
yeah.
We still talk. Even though, I mean, Cecilia's on the East Coast and Rachel's in LA and Melissa's mm-hmm. in Northern Cal, so it's like, it's, I guess life imitates art. You just stick together.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Which is so cool. Like, I have a friend that I was just thinking about this. I think I've known her for like the better part of a decade. Never met her. She lives in India. We used to play Neopets together, like back in high school, because I was totally uh-huh. addicted to that. And we don't necessarily talk all the time, but we're friends on Facebook, and we keep up with each other's lives. And it's like never awkward. And I love that about it. I love that it's just like, hey, remember this time, you know, we did this thing, and then on Neopets or whatever. And there's kind of this unspoken open invitation for if we're ever in the same part of the world to kind of like hang out. And I know a lot of people say a lot of bad things about the internet and that kind of thing, but like, I will never take for granted how awesome it is at connecting you with people and allowing you to stay in
yeah.
touch with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really.
So I want to touch on something that's maybe not so great about the internet now that I just said that, but Geek actually deals with obviously a lot of issues that women have. And one of the characters, Tanisha, she deals a lot in issues being in like the coding world and that sort of thing. And obviously a lot of women deal with harassment, and Gamergate happened. I think a lot of us are aware of what went down with all of that. And my question was, you know, what have you guys think has changed since Gamergate? What's kind of stayed the same? And what sort of harassment, sexism, discrimination do you guys are you guys personally aware of, and how have you dealt with that?
Well,
yeah,
you know, it's a big question.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, when we were first planning this was, you know, because it's been in the works for a long time, and we got together and had our story summit, and, you know, we're doing the plans for this. You know, Gamergate was still very much in our minds, and, mm-hmm. you know, and we were thinking of that as a specific sort of, you know, feminist nerd issue. But that was when the Clinton-Trump campaigning stuff was starting to heat up too, you know, but it was still several months before the election. And I feel like what ended up happening then is then while we were actually writing this and finalizing the writing and, you know, whatever, was when, you know, the election actually happened. And we were like, wow, so this is what we've been dealing with within sort of our nerd subculture for a while. And now all of a sudden everybody has to deal with it,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's not specific to technology or gaming or science fiction conventions or anime. It's everyone now, you know, and that was not really what we expected, you know, and it wasn't sort of anything we did that kind of made that happen. That was global things way beyond our, you know, our control. But I think it definitely shaped our desire to, you know, to push back and to fight and to, you know, have this representation and give these women, you know, fully realized lives and, you know, trials and tribulations and as well as, you know, triumphs and wins. So, you know, yeah.
I think not much. I totally agree with Cecilia. I think it's just not called Gamergate anymore. The techniques are still there. I mean, that whole make mine milkshake, the backlash against the comic book artist woman who just took a selfie with her and her friends and then just getting blasted for it. And then having another backlash against the backlash or the Google memo.
Like, right.
In this day and age, and then not being able to pull the employees together to discuss it because there were fears of reprisal because people were getting doxxed. The playbook is still there and still active.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I keep telling myself, like, this is 2017. This shouldn't be happening anymore. And yet it feels more prevalent than ever. And obviously that's very unfortunate. But I think that one of the great things is we have things like Geek Actually or other media, television shows, movies, and I want to talk about that in a little bit, that kind of push this feminist agenda. I just did like 8 air quotes at the same time.
I heard air quotes on there. Yeah.
But it kind of puts these ideas out there and tries, you know, the media and all of that. It tries to show that it doesn't have to be this way, and that women are just as capable as men, and that women can and should be allowed to be geeky and nerdy. And I love that there is so much material to pull from now. It's more handy than ever, you know, with Kindles and all of that and the internet and everything. It makes me hopeful that this stuff is getting out there to little girls and that they will grow up seeing the good side of nerd culture and how awesome it is. Like we were saying earlier, the internet brings people together and keeps them together.
Yep.
And I love the idea that, you know, something like Geek Actually adds to that. So that is really awesome. And one of the things that I also really love about Geek Actually is that it doesn't necessarily fit in one genre. You guys have a lot going on in this, which I think is like one of the cool things. It doesn't always work with every kind of book. Like some books you're like, please just decide what you are. But with Geek Actually, it works really well because it has some romance, some erotica. Wasn't expecting that, but actually kind of really liked it. So that was neat that it was just thrown in there as a sort of normal thing. Women's fiction and a lot of different elements to it. So what was that like for you guys to just be like, well, we're just going to do whatever the heck we want and see what happens?
Well, I think that the boundaries between those particular genres anyway are kind of fluid, especially now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been writing for 18 years now professionally, novels, and when I started, it was definitely like what was considered erotica then is like barely romance now.
right.
It's like everything got sriracha. It's like where people's palates just like got more extreme. I think that romance is the same way. This is happening now. Women's fiction, I think, covers a lot more ground. So I don't think it was so much a matter of breaking through as just being flexible. Because I've written in all those genres at different points. And I think that we just looked at, okay, what kind of experience do we want to give with Geek Actually? We're not going to shy away from sex because, hello, 2017. I think we're all grown up and all talk about sex at this point. And we turn to the fireplace or, you know, use kind of corny euphemisms. Sex. It's okay. And the same with romance. Romance is a part of women's lives. Actually, one of our characters is Ace. So even her choice to be Ace, her being Ace, not so much the choice part of it, but her coming out as that was an element of women's fiction, but it was like she wasn't going to get a romance arc necessarily. So we made the story fit around what these characters were rather than, okay, we're writing this kind of story.
Yep. What Kathy said. Yeah, 100%. but I mean, part of it is also just that writing erotica and sexuality was in the wheelhouse of a lot of people on the writing team. And we thought, okay, you know what? That's our strength. Let's go with it. People are going to expect it from people, you know, who are our regular readers are going to expect it from us. And if we're going to have romance, I think there's really got to be sex because, you know, that's not how women don't like do the like 3 months of dating first and then get a commitment from him and then put out a thing anymore if they ever really did, you know? I mean, that's not the reality of these women's lives and, you know, it's not the reality of my life. So, you know, why would I leave that out? You know, it felt like leaving something out if we weren't gonna, you know, really be going for it. So, sexuality and what they do is a big part of them discovering themselves and their, you know, their happiness, their whole personhood, et cetera, you know, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, we're big fans of diverse books, and obviously you guys do a fantastic job with that. I mean, it's really awesome just to see what, you know, we all look like and what our friends all look like on the page. And I think so often people shy away from that kind of stuff because it's not comfortable for them. And yet, you know, you can have something like Geek Actually where you just throw it all in there and it works because it works in reality too. And that's just really awesome to see. And one of my favorite things too is that everybody's interests in the series, they're so varied. And I was really curious about you guys specifically, like what are some of your favorite geeky pleasures? What do you guys get really hyped for?
Well, Game of Thrones is on tonight.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about that. Finally, like closing loops and exciting stuff is happening. So.
Oh my gosh.
Happy there.
So I don't watch Game of Thrones. I watch people watch Game of Thrones via Twitter.
That is exactly what I do. If Leslie Jones watched every single episode of Game of Thrones and had a reaction video, I would pick up the series in a heartbeat.
Maybe that might convince me. Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. I'm not good with gore or, you know, a lot of things. I'm a wimp about those things. And so it's much more fun to watch people's reaction to them, though, you know. So it's sort of like there are people who aren't into sports or whatever. And so when the Super Bowl or something is happening, they're watching people's reaction to the Super Bowl on Twitter, you know. So, yeah, I watch people watch Game of Thrones on Twitter because my entire feed, you know, is people who are freaking out about it. So I'm like, okay, so I actually kind of have followed the story because I know, you know, what happened to different characters and people's hopes and, you know, hopes being dashed, and, you know, so forth. So it's just, Yeah, I don't know. That's my way of consuming it.
I feel like, Brittany, that's so similar to you, because I know before you really got into watching a lot of the MCU movies, like, you would read the articles that we'd write and the things that we were, like, going crazy over, and you knew so much about it, like, without having to see the movies.
Yeah, I got passes to go see Civil War early, much to the dismay of all of my friends, and I had seen one Marvel movie, and it was Thor, and Thor was not in.
I was gonna say, those don't line up too much. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so
I say, oh my goodness, and Civil War is so much of a, like, emotional payoffs from previous arguments and fights and clover and buildups and whatever that are all coming out there. I'm just like, so did it make any sense to you? Did you like it?
I watched Winter Soldier right before going to see it.
Okay, all right.
And I'd never seen Captain America, though, so that was a little
rough.
And I knew a bunch about Iron Man because I'm friends with Karen, and you cannot be friends with Karen without Iron Man. So I had little bits and pieces. The only thing that really messed me up and I didn't know was happening, I was like, Vision is such a great character. And then I watched, like, a little bit of Iron Man, and I'm like, this guy sounds really familiar. This sounds so familiar.
I didn't know
that whole Vision thing had happened. So
Yeah,
that was the only thing that I was like, where did he come from? Why doesn't he have his own movie?
Or you're like, oh, gee, you know, they Paul Bettany also did the voiceover for this other thing.
Yeah. I was like, wow, he's really involved in this universe.
That's really funny. Yeah. So funny. But yeah, I don't know. I'm very spoiler averse. So it's like I want to experience things without kind of knowing too much about what's going to happen. So it's like, so I know there are more Marvel movies coming, but unlike a lot of people, like, I don't, like, obsessively watch the news and watch the trailers, and I don't even like to watch trailers. So it's like, you know, I know there's, like, a new Star Wars movie coming, there's a new, you know, whatever, and it's, I'm like, I don't want to know. All I want to know is the date to put on my calendar so I can buy the tickets in advance, you know, go to my IMAX 3D and leave the house and all that, and then, you know, but I don't want to know anything about it. And, you know, so I've got friends who are, like, downloading, like, bootleg screenshots to try to analyze the cat and the costumes. And, you know, I'm just like, no, I want to experience it as, you know, like, a first time without waiting for things I'm expecting and, you know, so forth and so on. And just, you know, take it all in. And then I'll go watch it 4 more times with you if you really want to analyze it, you know. Yeah, exactly.
That's just the kind of nerd I am. I like the reaction, like, genre. Now, I love seeing. So I think Roger Greer live tweeted John Wick, and I laughed my ass off.
Oh gosh!
It's just like, I don't know what's happening, but I can feel something bad's gonna happen to this dog. It was hilarious. But it's like watching it the first time all over again. It's like, that's why you drag all your friends and get them addicted to the same thing you're addicted to. And now there's, like, an entire YouTube, like, subculture of people who react to things. And it's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah, I absolutely. I mean, not to, like, toot our own horns too much, which I've kind of already been doing, but Brittany and I do rewatchable podcasts together. And the reason why I love that podcast so much is that we take a television show that is some sort of cult television show, either it got canceled too early, so, like, something like Firefly, or it's just very iconic for its genre. So right now we're doing Buffy and Angel, and we split it up. We have 4 newbies and 4 super fans, and I'm one of the super fans, and Brittany's one of the newbies. And one of my favorite things in the entire world is having them come on the episode and be like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe this just happened and what's going to happen next. And it's that sort of re-experiencing of something you already know so well, but seeing somebody else see it for the first time, react to it for the first time is so exciting. Yeah.
It's like bringing a kid to Disney World. You know, it's like you never get to go to Disney World for the first time again. So you bring a toddler, you know.
You get to experience it all over again.
Is, like, as a newbie, like, I've never watched Buffy before until now, is getting to something and, like, really just sticking to my guns of like, this is the thing that I love and you must worship it. And then having the super fans be like, I've watched this show 1,000 times and now I'm like totally seeing why you're obsessed with Angel. Mm-hmm. And like, mm-hmm. just like sort of mm-hmm. like watching the shift in their perspective and then them getting mm-hmm. mad at us because we're putting these thoughts in their
head. Exactly.
Pretty solidly Team Spike, I must say.
I'm not there yet. We're in season 6 and it's a little rough for me. And when it happened, I wasn't happy. I don't know where I'm
going. We'll just no comment the rest of this conversation because, oh boy. This is a good segue, though, into, I really wanted to ask you guys, you know, what do you think of these female-driven movies that are coming out lately? Obviously, Wonder Woman just like destroyed the box office, which was very exciting. Mm-hmm. Atomic Blonde is very new for the genre, and they did a lot of really cool things there. Captain Marvel is going to be coming up. You know, did you guys see any of those movies? What were your reactions, and what makes you excited about that?
Well, I definitely saw Wonder Woman. I thought that was great. I loved seeing the Princess Bride as a general. I thought she was unholy ass. I think that seeing more of those kind of films makes sense to me. I mean, I'd love to see where it's not just, you know, doing something stupid, being rescued by the guy. It's not, you know, side character. It's front and center with her own experiences and her own personality. So yeah. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that startled me. On Twitter, again, somebody was passing around, you know, graphs about Hollywood representations and, you know, so forth and so on. And it was like, since the 1950s, the number of female characters in Hollywood films has actually gone down instead of up. And the number of lead female characters has gone drastically down, while the number of male characters has continued to go up. So it's like we're making more and more and more movies, and instead of it moving proportionally, that we're making more and more and more movies with all male casts or with, you know, male leads. And it's like, really? Like, we're actually going backwards. So it's entirely this perception that it's like, oh, well, but, you know, you want, it's like playing the stock market. You know, when people make a movie, they're like, well, how can we possibly increase the chances that the return on investment will be upped by 2.5%, you know, 0.5%, you know, or whatever. And it's like, you know, whatever. They try to do all that, and they somehow, people keep deciding that women don't go to movies, women aren't where the ticket money is, you know, this, that, the other, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they've even forgotten that guys like to look at women, I think, in a way, you know. It's like even the objectifying roles are going away, you know. I was like, what? That's really weird. And it's like, yeah, I thought all those teenage boys who you thought are your top ticket buyers like to look at women, you know. So it's like, shouldn't there be more of them? I don't know. It's like even that logic doesn't, their own logic doesn't add up. So, yeah, I don't know. It's got to change. It's got to change.
The intersectionality does play a part here too, though, because if you think of another strong female lead, you can look at, let's just say it, the atrocity that was Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
Which could have been phenomenal.
Right.
But they decided to just erase her identity and completely whitewash the role.
Right. And that was 100% them. Yeah, that was 100% them being banking on just star power Scarlett Johansson. And, you know, another movie with Scarlett Johansson as the kick-ass heroine might have been 100% fine. You know, I don't know.
Well, she did fine in Lucy.
You know, whatever. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like, I think would have, and probably would have banked on her star power, but instead people were just like, what is this thing? You know, and it's like, yeah, I didn't see it. Yeah, I didn't see it.
Nope.
And I've got a lot of choices. That's part of the thing too, is that I've got a lot of places to spend my money. And if I'm gonna, like I said, if I go to a movie, I'm going to the IMAX 3D now. I'm not, you know, I don't go out every week. I wait for special ones that move me enough to leave my Netflix behind, right? You know, so it had better be good. And if I'm like, you know, then I'm not going. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it just astounds me, too, that, you know, a lot of men on the internet are saying, like, well, I don't want to go see Wonder Woman. I can't relate to that. And it's like, we've been relating to male characters for generations. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you mm-hmm. know, their stories don't have to be. That was one of the things that I liked about right. Wonder mm-hmm. Woman is, you know, she was obviously she's a woman, but her story is an iconic story. It's a story that you can right. step into and you can relate to no matter who you are. Right. And the fact that
right.
they're
exactly
the fact that they're just disregarding it because she's a woman just doesn't make sense. Like, my brain just starts to shut down. I just don't understand it. But
it's a lie too. I mean, I can't relate to her because she's a woman. I can relate to this 2 foot tall talking raccoon.
Yeah. Right. Or, mm-hmm. right.
It's right. Like, come on. Just if you're gonna say it, say it. You don't want to see it. You right. don't want to see. You don't want to see an empowered female. Let's just say it.
Well, or I think some of the guys who think that they can't identify with a woman, or who literally can't identify with a woman, it's because they've bought hook, line, and sinker this idea that masculine men can't and don't and shouldn't identify with women, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, actually, and it that's toxic masculinity at its heart. And, you know, most of the guys I know couldn't care less whether it was man or woman or, you know, whatever. Some of them are just like, oh, I don't like superhero movies. I'm like, that's fair.
You know? There's a lot of them right now. You know?
There are a lot of them, and they're just like, yeah, I'm tired of superhero movies. Let's see something else. I'm like, okay, great. You know,
exactly. And I guess the follow-up question. I guess the follow-up question to this too would be, you know, how if a woman is struggling with fitting into geek culture, what would be your advice for kind of navigating those waters that have been so long male dominated?
I think there are a lot of avenues at this point. If you're a woman and geeky, I've been a geek since back in the day. I mean, when I was in junior high and high school, I remember I lived down in San Diego. I used to go to like Spike and Mike's Sick and Twisted Animation Festival, and, you know, we watched anime, and I collected Akira comic books and read Sandman, and, you know. I had a lot of guy friends that were geeks, but I didn't necessarily feel excluded. Even when I went to college, I was able to find other women. And I think it's like a code where it's like, as soon as you reveal you're into one fandom, it doesn't matter what the women's fandom are in. They're just like, okay, I get this obsession.
Yeah.
One of us. So going online, you know, following like Geek Girl Con or Black Girl Nerds or just a lot of different just websites and blogs and podcasts and connecting with people there. I think that you'll definitely find a community that will bolster your interests and not make you feel like, okay, you have to fill out this, you know, 30-page questionnaire to prove your geek cred. I mean, that's crap.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. It never occurred to me when I was growing up that somehow I was doing something different than girls were supposed to do. I mean, mm-hmm. my dad brought me comic books starting when I was, you know, young enough when I first learned to read. I mean, you know, he was bringing me Wonder Woman and Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, and, you know, so he was just buying them at like at a newsstand, you know, whatever near his work, and then bringing them home. And it took me till I was in my 20s to realize that he was reading them first before he gave them to me. You know? I mean, I know, I was, because he kind of hid it well, I guess. He didn't, that was before like fandom was a thing, and, you know, whatever. My dad's in his 80s now, you know, and it was like, so I didn't know I wasn't supposed to like these things, that it was supposed to be a boy thing, until maybe I was, you know, we moved towns a couple of times, and then maybe my like fifth or sixth grade, some boy neighbor came over and he was like, what do you mean you like comic books? And I'm like, I like comic books. Like, why is this weird? I also had baseball cards, which also blew his mind. He was just like, I've never met a girl who had baseball cards. I'm like, okay, baseball cards I can understand are kind of a boy thing, but comic books? I mean, you know, I was like, what are you talking about? These are, you know, like, this is Wonder Woman, this is Supergirl, this is, you know, whatever. I mean, I had all kinds of Batman, you name it, right? And was just, I don't know. And I thought, oh, okay, I wonder what's going on here. And then it kind of, but then he was the only weirdo I knew who thought like that. You know, when I got to college, I was buying Sandman and, you know, all that kind of thing. We went to the comic book store, and I don't know, somehow I missed the sexism until much later. You know, maybe I was just lucky. So I never felt unwelcome. I started going to Worldcon and science fiction conventions like that in, you know, 1989 and then early 90s. I went around, you know, PhilCon, Aresia, BossCon, you know, whatever, that whole sort of circuit. And that was not a male-dominated space. Those were cons put on by science fiction fans for science fiction fans. They were mostly book-focused, but there was also gaming, costuming. You know, they would always be a masquerade contest, you know, that kind of a thing. And they were from the original, you know, the first WorldCon was in, you know, 1949, right? So it was in the 1940s, right? So it was like that strain that came up through, you know, Isaac Asimov and Harlan Ellison and all of them. And it was like, most of the con runners were women. I mean, the people who were organized and go-getters and doing stuff a lot of the time were female fans. You know, they're the organized ones. They're the ones who are used to herding the cats and, you know, whatnot. And so I didn't think of that as a male-dominated space either. And so it's been really interesting that it's in that the whole thing with, like, the sad puppies and all of that was some kind of, you know, like, they're looking back on, like the Hugo Awards and, you know, so forth and so on should be, like, science fiction should be for manly men with spaceships and rockets and, you know, this, that, and the other. And I'm like, I think you're remembering something that I don't think existed, really. You're having nostalgia for the male-dominated past that never was in order to try to make today like that. You know, like, you can't erase women's contributions to, you know, to this subculture, to this medium, you know. It's like, that's, I don't know, it's like whitewashing. It's like, you know, so many other things where that whatever the dominant culture or, you know, whoever's at the top of the tier wants to be like, no, we've always been in charge. It's always been like this. And you people have never been here before. And it's like, actually, no, you know, women have always belonged in geek spaces and, you know, so forth. And then it's just getting there because they're trying to push us out to make it a boys club, you know, all the more reason why we have to make space for ourselves at the table and say, you know, know what? Nope. You know, and then if that's too toxic, then we build our own. I mean, mm-hmm. One of the things I love about Harry Potter conventions is that many of the Harry Potter conventions out there are, it's basically 95% women, and the 5% men are either spouses or spouses, cosplayers, or wizard rockers. You know, it's actually more men have finally been coming in because we've been inviting more of them and being like, you know, you guys, it's okay. This isn't like some kind of, We don't make you, you know, take an estrogen shot before you come in. You know, it's like, it's really all right. And so we're starting to see a little more male diversity. But I think the first 10 Harry Potter conventions I went to were literally 95% women. And when you saw a guy, you were like, oh, I wonder, you know, how did you find out about this? Like, you know, I mean, because it was so that fandom was so organized online and so organized by fanfic writers, which are mostly women, that it was like it took the guys a lot longer to catch on that they, you know, like, you can show up too, it's okay.
Cool, definitely agree with everything that you guys said. And you know, I just want to tell our listeners too, as kind of we're winding down here, definitely check out Geek Actually, see what you guys think. And for you too, you know, if they do enjoy Geek Actually, what other books would you recommend that are kind of in this vein? Which ones inspired you as you were writing this series?
Well, you have to read Kathy's Fandom Hearts. Yeah, you have to read Kathy's Fandom Hearts series. That's a given. Yeah, for sure. And there are some other great romances and YA romances coming up now. But, you know, and of course, now I'm having that thing where I'm like, oh, it's Sunday night and my brain has stopped working and I can't remember any names or titles. Oh, man. They're out there, though. They're out there.
I'm going to say Melissa Blue's Dirty Sexy Geeks is a good one. The one I was talking about earlier, Looking for Group by, I want to say Alexi Hall.
Alexis Hall, yeah.
Alexis Hall. That's you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, actually, if you look up geek romance, it's a thing. you can look it up on Kindle. It's like a tag. It's a subculture, a subgenre that is really coming up fast. So it would not be hard to find.
Cool.
Other than that.
Okay, yeah, we've, someone out there is making like some Goodreads lists of it, you know?
Right.
There's a Twitter list that has heroines that are in STEM fields.
Oh, yeah.
And they have someone compiled this ginormous list of books that are primarily romances. So looking for that would probably be a great jumping off.
Cool.
Definitely. And I know on the podcast we've talked about The Only Thing Worse Than Me Is You by Lily Anderson. I love that book. That's a really good one. And like Geekerella just came out. Like there's definitely a bunch that are definitely in this vein, which is really cool. Well, that's basically it for our episode this week. And Kathy and Cecilia, I just want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about Geek Actually with us and talking about all of these nerdy things. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Brittany and I will be back with Kristen next week, hopefully, for something. Brittany, did you pick a book for book club?
Yeah, you'd think I would.
it's going to be a surprise. We have a couple of weeks. It's fine. We're procrastinators on book hype. Our listeners know this. We will figure that out soon, actually, because we probably should. It'll take me a while to read it and get back to everyone about that. But yes, Kathy and Cecilia, thank you so much again. And please, everybody, go check out Geek Actually. And we will talk to you guys next time. So bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.